So my family and I were not from here. I arrived when I was 3, but this is definitely home for me. Thanks to a number of experiences, relationships, and stories that root. So I don't think I ever really had connected with this place until in my 20s I had the opportunity to eat saguaro fruit with Stella Tucker at her family's traditional harvesting camp in Saguaro National Park West. And that camp, it's very simple. It's just a couple of simple wooden watos or ramadas and the fire where the juice of the fruit is cooked down into syrup. And that camp, it predates the park. It predates the state of Arizona. It predates the United States of America. And Stella, she showed me how to harvest the fruit of the saguaro with the saguaro. So by using the saguaro ribs lashed together to make a long pole and then a short crossbar of creosote, you knock down the fruits from the top of the cactus. And when it falls, you then take the dried flower off the bottom of the fruit, snap it off, and you use the base of that flower as a blade with which you cut open the skin so that that incredible red, sweet pulp can emerge. And oh my God, is it good. And I had never tasted anything so delicious. I mean, the whole experience was delicious, not just eating it, but how I came to have it in my hand and my mouth. And I was blown away by the sudden realization that I had grown up here surrounded by this, but I'd never seen it. Yet it was right there. I'd never experienced it. I'd never interacted with it, let alone digested it. And, well, as it was so good, I ate more. And more. And I didn't just eat the fresh fruit, but I ate the dried fruit off the ground. And then I found like my fantasy as a child of the juicy fruit gum tree where gum grows from trees. You know, my parents didn't let me eat gum. But yet if I could just find this tree, I could have as much of this juicy fruit gum as I wanted. Well, there is saguaro fruit trees that grow under those saguaros. And when the fruit drops and dries on those trees, you can pick it like the juicy fruit gum. So I kept eating and eating, and I just couldn't stop. And then before long, I started to get kind of loopy because I was eating so much of this and high sugar content. And so I kept picking because along with gorging, I wanted to contribute. I wanted to contribute to Stella and her syrup production. And so when she saw me laden with all this weight of the harvest, she just started laughing. And I said, "What? What's so funny?" And she said, "Oh, you think you have so much, but you have so little." What? And she said, "No, look, you have to separate the edible pulp from the skin." And then she showed me how to do that. And she said, "But look, it's very important that when you separate the skin, you take that skin with its wet red innards facing up, and you have to place that at the base of the saguaro from which you harvested that fruit." Wow. Why? And she said, "So the rains will come." What? And I was just blown away by this idea. I was like, "Wait, you mean I could play a role in the coming of the rains? I love that." And then the whole thing transformed this extractive harvesting endeavor into one of reciprocation. And all of a sudden, the image of the sloth came to mind. Because years ago in school, I had learned about the sloth, which, you know, lives in the tropical forest high up in the canopy eating the leaves. And its only defense against its many predators is its excellent camouflage when it does not move. But yet, when it's been eating for quite some time and its bowels are full, It risks everything. It risks its life and moves and climbs down the tree to where far more of its predators live. Climbs down to the bottom where it takes a massive shit. And that shit is such a gift because it is literally risking its life to return the nutrients that it took from the tree to put back in the soils in that very same tree so more leaves, more food, more life, more sloths can grow. And I had been eating so much of this glorious fruit, I became very sloth-like, and I knew how to do it right. So, but Stella, she also taught me that there would be none of this glorious ripe fruit if it weren't for the intense dry heat of the month of June. And in an instant, the month I despised more than any became my favorite. And in an instant, June became my January, especially knowing that after the heat of June, the rains would follow, which would then germinate the seeds that had fallen to the ground. It was my January, it was my new year, because it was my month of renewal. And I so appreciated this experience that Stella had given me. And I realized I had been longing for it for over 20 years. Because finally, I had a story. I had an experience that was uniquely of this place. And you see, I grew up listening to all kinds of amazing stories. Because my parents, they're incredible people. And they would tell these unbelievable stories when I was a child of lumberjacking, of building a raft and rafting down the Mississippi River, of traveling and living all throughout India for many different years, of being chased as a child by an ostrich and a baboon and almost losing their life, and interviewing world leaders. And while these stories were incredible, they were bridges to other times, other experiences, to the life of my parents before I arrived. But they had nothing to do with this place where I lived. So while I was so grateful for what Stella had given me and the fact that I was now starting to set some roots, I also felt a deep hollowness because I realized I didn't have a purpose. And so I sought out trying to find that purpose. So I found myself traveling oftentimes to places that were where many of my parents' stories had come from. And I ended up in the driest region of Zimbabwe. And I met this incredible subsistence farmer, Mr. Zephaniah Piri Maseko. And he had transformed a wasteland into an oasis by working and living with the natural systems and primarily by planting the rain. And I was so blown away by this single day I spent with him and seeing what was possible. And I just started venting, and I told him about how frustrated I was about the situation in my community and how I was contributing to the death of my community and its depleting waters. And by also interacting with the infrastructure that was ever growing and killing off more, blading more of the desert, I didn't want to be part of that anymore, and I wanted to leave. And he then slapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "You cannot leave." What? He said, "Because if you leave, if you run from your problems, you will just plant problems and germinate problems everywhere you go. But if you can instead figure out solutions and transform those problems into solutions, well, then you will have the ability to do that wherever you find yourself." And I was so ready for such a challenge. And this was no empty challenge. This was a genuine challenge because it came from a man that stepped up to that challenge, succeeded again and again and again. And through his efforts, I saw this is a challenge that can be met because he has met it. So I came home with a purpose. And I strove to try and transform things, starting right in my neighborhood in the core of Tucson and Dunbar Spring, and working with neighbors to transform barren streets into forested corridors of life, community, and evolving potential, with tree plantings of rain and trees, food-bearing native trees. And the community part was so incredible about this for me, because by reaching out to neighbors and just trying to get this thing happening, but then sharing stories and learning about one another, I got a depth of experience of this neighborhood I never would have otherwise known. I learned about all these struggles with segregation and prejudice. I learned of these long-forgotten burials that were so often uncovered. And we actually uncovered a number of them in our tree planting efforts. And I learned that one of the greatest ways to fight crime is just to sleep together. And maybe not quite what you're thinking, because before air conditioning, almost everybody slept outside in summer nights just to be cool enough. And as you were outside, you heard everything, so you could not commit a crime. So all these rich stories I was learning about, and but it wasn't just stories of the past. It was also, then we started talking about how we could brainstorm and make things happen in the present and the future. And it was incredible, all these artists, creatives, makers, types that came in to the warehouses that had been purchased for a city and state plan to run this massive fuck up of a roadway project that was going to rip through the pedestrian scale downtown Tucson. And just on a month-to-month leases, they set up shop, and bam, all of a sudden, much of the glory of the past was in the present with a twist, because elders of the neighborhood had told me about how you didn't have to leave the neighborhood in the past to get your needs met. There were blacksmiths, teachers, barbers, so much there, and all run by neighbors, not people from elsewhere, not corporations from elsewhere. So it was amazing what all these people were doing. And we had the food part of it was we were growing the food with the edible forest. We also were growing gardens. And then there was this incredible dumpster diving culture that was thriving. So people would there was these dumpster diving Olympics. There was Iron Chef competitions where you had to make things with dumpster goods. And then there was even Mr. Brown, the community fridge and pantry, where you had to go, if you had extra dumpster goods, you put them in there. If you didn't have enough, you took what you needed. And this was so needed, because one Christmas Eve, when we hit a Trader Joe's dumpster, we ended up with a car full of frozen seafood, meat, and chocolates, which was spread around. There was fish fries and grills every night for a month. But, and best of all, was the insane talent night, where once a month there would be a talent show where these double-decker bicycles that had a jousting competition with lances on fire. And then there would also be the MC and his sidekick that would be wrestling with one another, trying to kill one another. Yep, okay. I'm going to wrap it up here, sorry. And then the raunchy cheerleaders of new mothers that would tell their cheer, and as soon as they were done, they would lift up their shirts, grab their breasts, squeeze them, and spray the audience with mother's milk. I loved this. There was so much depth, life, potential in the neighborhood. And I was so grateful for the people that shared it, that challenged me to care for it, to contribute to it, and who lived it. And thanks to that, I found home.